Welcome to the PlayStation 5 Central Podcast, where we give you all the news, the reviews, and the
rumors
on the PlayStation 5 and its upcoming game state. I'm joined by Vykarth. How are you, mate?
I'm doing
well.
Well.
How well are you doing?
As well as it can be based on the title of this episode. But more importantly, Dan, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, mate. I'm gearing up for Atomic Heart, which comes in a couple of days. Looking forward to that.
Very exciting.
But that's not today's topic. Today's topic's an interesting one that Vykarth's been gearing up for many moons. Ubisoft and the downfall of the company.
The dire...
What are we calling it? What's the title of this episode?
The dire state of Ubisoft. That's what I'd call it. Dan.
Okay, so why are they in a dire state?
Because we are just...
I'm going to play devil's advocate in a way, yep. But I'm also going to agree with you on certain scenarios, because how can you not? But
yeah.
I come from a point of view where Assassin's Creed Valhalla was one of their best-selling titles ever.
Well, that's true. You can't argue that. It was one of their best-selling.
So they're not into... How dire is it then? If they've already just come off a high-selling game in 2020, I believe it was.
I think that's a very important thing to consider as well.
That's actually 3 years ago.
Anyway. they still have a lot of success with their brands. And, you know, I do have a piece here at the end about the positives and the positive outlook of Ubisoft and what they have to look forward to. But I think for me, coming from... You know, EA and Ubisoft were sort of the games you grew up on. EA more, they're a bit older. But, you know, EA and Ubisoft and these sort of companies, they're games you grew up on. And then seeing them slowly but surely go more and more downhill, EA sort of turned themselves back. But it does, that's sort of the point of view where I'm coming from. And, you know, there's been all this news about Ubisoft's layoffs and, their operating losses and all this sort of stuff, which has just brought into question a bit about what is the future of Ubisoft and why are they doing so bad from a financial point of view. And that's where I come in, and that's where I'm having a look. We're going to have a bit of a critical analysis of this company.
Well, people should know that you have put together this comprehensive document. It's 47,000 pages long with the background of Ubisoft, their financials for the last 25 years, their quarterly revenue streams and gross profits and net profits, their employee lists.
Sure,
infiltrated Ubisoft headquarters, and he pretended to be an intern for a full year just for this one episode to gain knowledge.
I've got Yves Guillemot's home address. I've got everything. And just like you know,
wow, okay.
Just how in the older Assassin's Creed, you know, Desmond would, he would infiltrate Abstergo. I've done the same to Ubisoft. But let's, you know, we might as well get kicked into it and see. So I've sourced this from a lot of documents, and I'll keep mentioning the different sources. But the main one is Bloomberg.
The main source is probably... That you did.
Yeah, my internship, my hacked data leaks, but Bloomberg and Kotaku are probably the main two. So I'm going to give a bit of a background of what's been happening from Ubisoft from a company point of view, and this is mainly from a Bloomberg article in January last month.
And we're going to keep it to dot points. We're not going to overload the information.
The company stuff is just a bit of a background. We don't want to get into it. We just want to set the scene. All right. So. We're going to say on the 11th of Jan, so there was some interesting news that Bloomberg reported about Ubisoft. Basically, Ubisoft, they said that they expected their full year operating income to be in the red, which means in the negatives, as they've delayed games and they have lower net bookings. Now, what is net bookings? That's basically the net, not gross, net amount of products and services sold digitally or physically during a period, such as their sales in a way.
So games.
Yeah. Yeah, but it includes things like licensing fees, you know, in-game advertising, merchandising, and strategy guides.
What was
guides,
this
all
for?
That
what
extra
year?
stuff. For this year, they're saying, look, our net bookings, we're actually lower than what we've predicted. So we're expecting a lower net bookings. And with these delays, that's why our operating income for this year is going to be in the red. It's going to be at a loss. So on the day this article was published, they expected their net bookings will likely fall by 10% after an earlier forecast of a 10% increase. So it's a 20% swing. They thought their sales are going to increase by 10%, but now they've realized, no, it's actually going to go down by 10%.
What games have they had come out the last year? Not much.
Not much.
They had Champions, which was a dud.
Mm-hmm.
They had a DLC for Valhalla, which probably didn't generate incredible results.
And think about all the games that they have delayed, which, yes. 100%. We're going to get into that, and we're going to see what games
they
have coming up this year as well.
Rainbow Six Extraction in January 2022, which was a bit of a dud as well.
Yes.
They did Rocksmith Plus, which isn't a big thing. Mario Rabbids, I think that undersold as well. Then you got Just Dance. And then
plenty
of delays, as you said, with Avatar, yes. Skull of Bones.
Yeah.
Beyond Good and Evil. Yeah, we'll get into that.
Yeah, exactly, 100%. So basically the company expects an operating loss of $538 million US for the current fiscal year. And this is compared to an operating profit of $400 million initially forecast. So initially forecasted a $400 million profit. This is euros. And then now they're saying, no, we're not even going to get a profit. We're going to get a loss of $500 million. So this is a $1 billion. Yeah, this is a $1 billion swing, essentially, because $500 million profit to $500 million loss is what they're predicting. So just under $1 billion. But that's a huge swing in estimated operating income. And then we saw on the 12th of Jan, which was around this time when all this was being reported, that Ubisoft shares dropped by 21%, which is their biggest decline, intraday decline since 2019, putting it at its lowest levels in nearly 7 years. And to put that in perspective, what game came out 7 years ago from Ubisoft? Assassin's Creed Syndicate. Assassin's Creed Syndicate. Yeah,
that's literally the low point, nearly. Around that time, yeah.
Around that time. So it's gone down to those levels. And from now, if you look, I believe it's come back up from that since. But it's not a good look, is it? And basically, once again, they revised their net bookings for the third quarter of this year to around 725 million euros compared to their previous 830. So it's just showing that everything that they have predicted, that they're forecasting as a business, is either in the red or way lower than what they've thought or what they've initially estimated. Now, they also announced that there's going to be a 500 million euro write down. Okay, so this write down is basically where,
like a write off.
It's sort of like a write off where, you know, your sales are an asset, and you're saying, okay, it's historically, this is where we think it's going to cost. Or let's talk about it as like an asset, right? So you value your asset. We've got to write down $500 million worth of assets, right? So we've got to reduce the value of $500 million worth of assets, right? Now, it's not like they've lost $500 million. This isn't like, you know, they have to pay or they've lost this cash flow. This is just an accounting thing. So it's not a bad thing because it does reduce their taxable income, like you said, like a tax write-off. But it does mean that they have to find somewhere in their assets to lower or to reduce by $500 million. All right? So that's a big thing.
Which
partly
means
because
cutoffs, cancellations,
yes,
things of that
exactly.
Nature.
Reducing staff, you know.
Have they done that yet? Have they done because Google have cut?
Yeah,
A
lot of tech companies have.
Cutting people at the moment. I think Meta was another one. Who else?
So
there's plenty.
So as part
Xbox,
of this 500 million.
Microsoft?
Yeah, dude. Microsoft 343. That was, I mean, not just 343, but Microsoft was huge. Yeah.
But that could also be about the climate that we're in.
Yes.
A lot of companies
are
doing it. So,
it's a bit of both. Definitely that is a big factor as to why.
But that hasn't really affected Ubisoft from what we're saying here. It's been more possibly mismanagement.
Yeah. Well, it's probably both, to be honest. They all play into it. And this writer, now I will say, they did cancel 3 unannounced games. And then back in July of last year, they also cancelled 4 games. So that's 7 games in basically within a 6 to 7 month period. They've cancelled 7 games. So that is pretty big. Now, a few more business things. Basically, they said we're going to do a cost reduction plan of 200 million euros. So this means, like you said before, Dan, they are not replacing some of the employees that have left the company, and they're going to sell some non-core assets. So they're
one of the games that they cancelled, by the way, was a game called Project Q.
Yes,
which was a battle royale.
They also cancelled Splinter Cell VR. They also cancelled Ghost Recon Frontline.
Which they showed a trailer for. It was a fully-fledged game. They didn't even
release it. It was a BR, wasn't it? It was Battle Royale.
That's insane. Yeah, it was. But that's insane. You've got everything there. They didn't even attempt to release it? What?
Yeah, that's the thing. And the other thing is, Dan, we didn't even know what the other games were. There were 7. We know maybe 3 of them. So who knows what these other games were they cancelled? Like, you know what I mean? What made the Ubisoft cutting room floor? We don't know.
Could be mobile games too. Remember?
Yeah. It could be mobile projects. I wonder if one of them, Dan, was like some slated AAA game, but who knows? So basically they also said in the company press release, there'll be a targeted restructuring, divesting some non-core assets and usual natural attrition. Now, natural attrition is just the gradual reduction in employee numbers. Nothing deliberate. It just happens. So this isn't like a deliberate employees leaving. Employee attrition is more, it just, your workforce diminishes over time. So the biggest difference between, let's say, employee attrition and employee turnover is that turnover takes into account all terminations. So this includes positions that are refilled. But, you know, that's not a big thing, but I just wanted to explain that in case anyone didn't know what that meant.
Okay, but so the studio released Mario Rabbids on October 20th, developed with Nintendo.
Yes, and basically Ubisoft expected it to be one of their best sales for the holiday seasons. However, as Yves Guillemot said, it had disappointing sales. He said,
because they wanted to ride off the coattails of Mario.
They did.
And unfortunately, that's not how it works.
The company also said Just Dance as well. So Mario Rabbids and Just Dance, they predicted these are going to be good, but they quoted that they both had disappointing sales despite excellent ratings, as Yves Guillemot quoted, and an ambitious marketing plan. So he said,
I didn't see any marketing on either of them.
I didn't see anything. We are clearly disappointed by our recent performance, he said in the financial statement.
I'm in this world 24/7. I saw nothing for both games. So I don't know what this ambitious marketing plan was. I'd love to see it. I never saw anything.
Exactly.
I barely saw reviews for both titles. I didn't see anything for Just Dance. Now, I'm not the consumer that's possibly going to play it.
You would have thought you would have saw Rabbids, Mario and Rabbids, because that's always around, you know.
But that was interesting that game got a sequel. I didn't feel like that game not warranted a sequel. It was a good game, but it was just a bit of a random IP to do a sequel on, I thought. So
it is. But they, crossover sell. We know crossover sell, Dan.
But Rabbids aren't a big IP. They keep trying to push Rabbids.
They're trying to make it a thing.
It's not a thing.
They're trying to make it a thing. It's not a thing. Yeah, they're trying to make it a thing. Like Mario obviously is doing the heavy lifting, but they want... I think it's actually pretty smart. Get Mario, which is the big one, and then try to push your Rabbids as a crossover and then try to make it a thing. But it obviously didn't work.
It's like pairing Solid Snake with Emmett. Emmett Graves from Walk. Yeah. That's the difference in IPs you're dealing with.
Yeah. Yeah. You're 100% right, Dan.
Emmett Graves was in PS All Stars, by the way.
He was. I was very happy that you referenced that, Dan. So I'm really, really proud of that.
What was his super? Do you remember?
Insane super. One of the best in the game. Turned into the whole mech. You'd get at least 6 to 7 kills.
I never played him.
I know. I did a lot.
No.
Lean level 300.
Anyway, so yeah,
a discussion for another episode.
Yep.
Yeah, basically, the other thing is they actually admitted we're cancelling these games because of economic pressure. So they've actually admitted economic pressure is making us cancel these three games that we actually don't know what they are. But this is 6 months ago, they did cancel four other games, which are the Splinter Cell VR, Ghost Recon Frontline, and two others, and I think the Project Q. So this makes seven games cancelled in the last 6 months, as I said.
That's sad now, because Splinter Cell VR possibly could have been like Half-Life Alyx if done well. Could have been a premium, but
I want
it probably would have been shoehorned in and very average. But we'll never know.
Mm. All right, two more points. All right, so that's all the company stuff. All right, but I wanted to basically sidestep into, if we remember, a bit of controversy with Ubisoft where Yves Guillemot in an email, and a company email as a response to all this stuff, said to his staff, the ball is in your court to deliver this lineup on time and at an expected level of quality and show everyone what we're capable of achieving. He copped a lot of backlash for that because he's basically palming it off and blaming the all the staff and the developers.
What a dumb thing to say. You're trying to, that is just not the thing to say when it's he's already under pressure. It is tone deaf. What's he thinking?
I think it would be remiss of me not to actually be fair sighted and say what he actually followed up to that email and try to clarify what he said. Whether you think it's a good clarification or not, it should be said, just to make sure that we're saying both sides. He said, when saying the ball is in your court to deliver our lineup on time and the expected level of quality, I wanted to convey the idea that more than ever, I need your talent and energy to make it happen. He went on to say, this is a collective journey that starts, of course, with myself and with the leadership team to create the conditions for all of us to succeed together. I just think
this isn't the way to do it.
Not the way to do it in their current positioning.
I feel like he should have been a lot more positive than trying to rally the troops for the final Super Bowl game. It's a different atmosphere. You know,
100%.
These guys are probably under crunch and everything, and some of them won't be getting paid well. And then they see this big rig who's making $20 million. Say something like that when he's probably never been in the trenches, let's be honest.
Yes.
Not the way to go. Right. I don't think it's the way to go.
Mm. Now, the other thing is 40 developers staged a strike in Ubisoft Paris on the 1st of Feb, I believe it was, for better pay and working conditions. So that was also, that sort of rode a bit under the radar news-wise, but that was something that is important. And then we know in late 2020
Sorry to cut you off, but that's what I'm saying when I say this stuff. That everyone wanted better paying working conditions. There was a strike and all that sort of stuff. And then he says that.
Exactly. So, we know in 2020 they had huge sexual misconduct allegations. There's huge, systemic cultural issues. A lot of the staff are saying none of this has really been fixed. None of this is really, they haven't made huge moves. They did, I know that the chief creative officer and the managing director both got fired or let go, or they resigned, I should say, as a response to this. So it was pretty high up. All this stuff was happening. And there was some crazy statistic out there that I saw, like a huge percentage of people, like a significant percentage, all of them have experienced sexual misconduct at the workplace at Ubisoft and things like that. So look, it's not looking good, but that is pretty much a summary. So, we've got their net losses.
Didn't he also have a sexual misconduct scandal?
I don't think Yves Guillemot specifically, but a lot of, Ubisoft, it was through and through. Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Now, just to put in some context, he co-founded Ubisoft. He is one of the co-founders back in 1980.
There's like five Guillemot brothers, and they all founded Ubisoft.
The Guillemot. A mafia fucking boss or something.
So, just to sum it all up, we've got the company, they've expected all these losses, operating losses. Their net sales have gone down. Their shares have gone down. They've cancelled seven games. They've got all these delays. Mario Rabbids Just Dance didn't do well. So sexual misconduct, Yves Guillemot with these emails, all this sort of stuff.
It was all at one time too. It was like one after the other. Couldn't catch a break.
Here's the thing, right? So this is the outlook, and this is the four main things I've gotten from Ubisoft, not just from this news thing, but from what we've talked about throughout. Anyone who's listened to the podcast for a while knows my feelings, Dan's feelings, Jordan's feelings on Ubisoft, but I've attributed it down to four main reasons, all right? First one is mismanagement. Second one is it's a bit of a bloated company. The third one is they focus on iteration over innovation. And the fourth one is they focus on chasing a trend rather than setting it.
Okay, so, I want to go through them, but first I want to hit on bloated company. What do you mean by bloated company?
Okay, it's good to get this one out of the way because once again, it is a bit businessy. So bloated company, right? So I want to talk about something called their operating margin. I had a look through this, Dan, all right? I had a look through this. And it basically measures how much profit a company makes on a dollar of sales.
Once everything's taken out, what is the revenue?
Yes. It doesn't include fixed. So a good example is it's the money that involved in paying for the day-to-day operations and what percentage of that is revenue. So let's say, for an example, if they had 10% operating margin, that means for every dollar they sold in revenue for whatever their game is, you get 10 cents as operating income. The other 90 cents were used to pay operating expenses, right? So 10% means that if you sell a $70 game, you might only get $7, which is 10%. You might only get $7 in profits, you know, as operating income.
That seems
the rest
very
would
low.
Have been expenses. That is low. That's why I said 10% is just a random example. Oh, it's hard to say whether something's high or low. You have to compare it to its competitors. You know, because in different industries
it's different. Okay, so EA's got 18%.
Yes. Take-Two is lower with 13%, but they have some profit sharing. I saw this thing, but they got internal royalties and all this sort of stuff with the Rockstar. They got a profit sharing. So that's why it's lower. But EA is 18%. Activision Blizzard is 26%. Now, Ubisoft is 9%, which implies that compared to 18%, on EA, which is double, and Activision Blizzard at 26%. I picked some comparable companies. Their operating margin is really low, Ubisoft, which means a lot of their money.
Yeah, a lot of their money. Enough compared to the other two.
It's more that they're only getting 9 cents back on the dollar. It's basically saying
I know what it is. It's microtransactions. Those other two games have Call of Duty and FIFA for microtransactions, which is less demand, physical demand of humans, isn't it? For something like that.
Yeah.
What are Ubisoft? They've got Siege, not on the same level.
Yeah. Look, it could just be high expenses as well. You know, they've got so much staff. Like, you know, this is the thing I wanted to compare. EA's staff, you know, if you look at the staff count, Activision Blizzard has 9,800 staff.
There's no
EA
way.
EA has 12,900 staff. Ubisoft have 20,000 staff.
Okay, they are bloated. They've got double
That's
Activision.
That's what I mean.
What?
They've got 20,000 staff. They've got double Activision Blizzard, nearly double of EA. Not nearly double, but a lot more than EA. EA has 12,900. Ubisoft have 20,665. Take-Two have 7,800. Somehow make GTA. Like, you know what I mean?
So it goes to show it's the quality, not the quantity. Sadly.
Yes, exactly. And these numbers were as of 2022. It just goes to show, yes, they've got a low operating margin, but they've got a high staff. And you can sort of see it being thinned out, the operating expenses. Ubisoft have 45 studios.
That's why.
45
studios.
They've
got 45 studios compared to the others. They don't have nearly as many as that.
Nearly as many. Now, if you remember, we mentioned this before with Sean Layden. I just wanted to bring this up, right? Remember Sean Layden said when he spoke with Bloomberg that costs seem to double each generation with Sony's major first party titles costing up to $100 million on the PlayStation 4.
With games
said,
if these we days. Can't,
yeah, and he basically said, "quote If we can't stop the curve from going up, all we can do is try de-risk it." He explained that puts you in a place where you're incentivized towards sequels. So this is just a really interesting thing about how, and then, you know, Layden went on to say, you know, they're going to get harder and harder to justify these decisions for new innovative games. And he basically said, quote, what happens is you end up with 3 to 4 silos of games or game types that continue to exist and variety is squeezed out. And basically pointing to how publishers are chasing the next $1 billion phenomenon like Minecraft and Fortnite. So I just wanted to include that. Just what Sean Layden
said.
That's
a very interesting stats fight. But one thing that you haven't mentioned is I believe someone like Activision have a lot of freelancers, as you call them. So they're not on the books as employees, but they do help. And I would say EA do as well. And it could be in the thousands of those.
That's a very, very good point, Dan, because it is a lean thing to do to hire a lot of contractors. This could be like a permanent staff number.
So but we don't know the ins and full ins and outs, but this does paint a good picture of what you're saying, that it is bloated. Now I do agree.
Even if this was permanent staff, think about how expensive permanent staff are compared to contractors, like the benefits you have to pay, leave, and all that sort of stuff for permanent staff.
They also had a strike because they're not getting paid enough.
I know.
That's the thing. So
bloated company was one of the lower points on my thing, but I just wanted to get that out of the way. Something interesting. Operating margin being way lower, the staff count being way higher, and just the studios and how expensive games are now.
You look at inflation, I believe games are actually cheaper now than they were 20 years ago. Am I wrong in saying that?
They should be
higher than $70.
Yes, yes.
They should be like $75.
No, more than that. It should be probably in the hundreds.
You sure it's that high?
Well,
you'd have to look, but anyway.
In 10 years, it's been $70 for about more than 10 years, don't you agree?
60.
Yeah. It's been, $70 was new, I'll say that. Aside from the $70 to $60 for about 10 years, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
10 years worth of inflation is not $10. It's not 60 to 70. So you're definitely right.
Well, we're not looking at 10, it's 15% or whatever it is.
Yes. So if I said to you, well, 10%. Let's say $60 in 2000 and, so we'll say $60 in 2012 worth now.
Yeah.
$80. $78.
Yeah, okay.
$80.
And that's just 10 years ago.
And that's just 10 years ago. If you're going to say 2000 and let's say 2008, where games are probably still $60, you know, it's about $83. So yes, games are definitely a lot cheaper in terms of they're actually losing money because they've held it at the $70 price point.
But I've had this debate with, I don't know, if maybe you, but I would pay $100 for any Naughty Dog game. Any Naughty Dog game, I'd pay $120.
But I
wouldn't
pay
that for a Ubisoft game at the moment, I have to say.
Yes. See, the games that maybe aren't worth $70 are the ones winning, and the games that maybe are worth more than that are losing out because I think that no one's doing a variable cost type model. Like all these games are just set $70. $70, $70, all free to play. You know what I mean?
They don't try it. Why don't they try it?
Who knows?
Because it's a big risk.
Let me put it like this. It's hard to charge more than $70. It's easy to charge less than $70. But if your game is really worth $40, why wouldn't you just charge $70 if that's the going rate, if that makes sense? So I don't think anyone's bold enough to actually charge.
That's dangerous.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's willing to charge more than $70 because consumers, we are so used to things being $70 from $60, but we're so used to it being $70.
Well, you know what I'm noticing now? That pretty much all these games are having digital deluxe editions that are $50 more, and you'll get to play it 3 days early or
early
you'll
access,
get these
man.
Skins. Every single game's doing it because people will pay it three. They're obviously getting the data, and people are willing to pay extra to get it early for one. And for two, it's easy money in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the new collector's edition. We're seeing lesser collector's editions where you get the statue and that, because that's not really worth it anymore for them. With the margins, I wouldn't have thought.
I love statues though, man.
I know,
I want to collect them.
They're like $500 Australian now, some of these collector's editions. Yeah, like the Resident Evil one was, I think it was $600. It was insane.
That's a console. That is essentially a console.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is about $300 or $400 US. So. Yeah.
So look, bloated company, that is one thing. Now, the second thing I want to talk about was, let's go to mismanagement, right? Now, I want to give you something, Dan. Mm. Ubisoft have broken the Guinness World Record for what, Dan? They broke the Guinness World Record for the longest game in development. They
beat Good and Evil.
Good and Evil 2. I think this beat Duke Nukem Forever. I think that was a previous holder.
And they've confirmed it's still going.
Apparently, yep. They've said apparently it's still in development.
Now,
still in its early stages.
When did it start development?
Beyond Good and Evil. I do remember Beyond Good and Evil coming to E3.
Can you look that up? Because I reckon it's been 7-8 years or whatever it is. Now, the tech's outgrown then. So anything they did that long ago couldn't be feasible anymore. I wouldn't
and
have
that's
thought.
That's the thing.
With the upgrades and engines and technology.
It's been more than 15 years, Dan.
Yeah, so they've scrapped. They must have scrapped it multiple times. They've scrapped they must it have multiple scrapped times. It
multiple yeah. times. But I remember in E3 2016, that's when I remember it being shown.
Yeah, and that's when I thought, okay, this is in the next few years. This is coming out. That build at that point must be scrapped at this point.
Yeah, that is essentially right.
Because it's been 7 years. That's insane.
And then the other big one, Dan, Skull and Bones. So everyone's favorite
I've never
game.
Been hyped for that. As soon as they revealed it, I thought it was a mistake.
I thought so too. So here's the thing, Dan. Skull and Bones began development back in 2013 as a multiplayer expansion to Black Flag, for those who don't know, and it released as a post-launch update. Now, this production is led by Ubisoft Singapore. So I want you to keep that in mind for a reason, right?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I got this from a Kotaku article. The Kotaku article, basically the headline was, first it was an Assassin's Creed expansion. Now it's Ubi's 8-year nightmare. That's the one. So this article basically said really interesting things. So there was a few quotes in this article. I want to read it to you, Dan. Interviews with more than 20 current and former Ubisoft developers, as well as those with knowledge on the game, talked about its troubled development and the studio's leading production on it, telling a different story. Skull and Bones never had a clear creative vision behind it. It suffered from too many managers vying for power and was plagued by almost annual reboots and mini refreshes, they said. Years into development, basic
mini
questions.
What does that even mean?
I know. Years into development, basic questions about the game's core design weren't nailed down, even as ambitions for the would-be games as a service continued to mount within Ubisoft's head Paris office.
That's what I find funny. They haven't taken this one out the back and shot it, but they shot those other games.
Yeah, there is any. So remember that Singapore thing, Dan? There's a reason why they haven't, and I'll get to that in a sec. All of these people that they interviewed, I'll say they remained anonymous for obvious reasons. So obviously there was more quotes. Nearly 8 years after it was first conceived, Skull and Bones has blown through its initial budgets. According to three sources, the project has already cost Ubisoft more than $120 million, with that number continuing to balloon as hundreds of developers from other studios continue pitching in to try ship the game without any more delays. So they're getting people from different projects.
I shouldn't laugh, man, but it is a disaster.
There's and here's the thing, right? Ubisoft developers, they receive project-based bonuses based on how well the games do. So those attached to big, nearly annual franchises like Assassin's Creed, they often get really good payouts. Skull and Bones is so in the hole, sources told Kotaku, that the project has to undergo a financial write-off internally for its developers to still have any shot at any sort of payout for them, any sort of bonus for them. So here's the thing, Dan.
This is going to have to be a momentous event.
Occasion. When it comes out.
To come out. But I guarantee when it comes out, it'll be crickets. That's just going to be... I can't. It's sad. It actually
the
sad.
Question begs to be asked, with its initial budget being blown, it's, you know, write-offs just to get people bonuses, it's going through refreshes, no one has an idea of what the game is, it's
well,
in such a poor state.
What would you do if you were brought in as a director? What would you change about the game?
The entire thing? They need to go the way of Sea of Thieves, where it's a cooperative multiplayer experience where people can get out of their ships, do that sort of stuff. Making it just a ship thing is far too limited, far too narrow in scope, I personally think. I think they could make a good Sea of Thieves competitor with more, you know, less cartoony, more realistic Assassin's Creed, Black Flag.
The problem is that's going to cost them another $100 million,
which they don't have. And we've actually reported on this before in the podcast, because it was news that came out a while ago, but I just want to reiterate why, if anyone's asking, why the hell haven't they taken this game out the back and shot it? Why haven't they cancelled this game? It is because, according to Kotaku, right, we said this a while ago, but basically they made a deal with the Singapore government. In addition to hiring a certain number of people as its Singapore studio, they got generous subsidies. So the Singapore government basically said, hire some people, some of our people, we'll give you them, and we'll give you some generous subsidies. So the deal was they must launch a brand new IP in the next few years. That was a stipulation for this deal. Singapore said, we'll give you generous subsidies. We'll give you some staff if you release a game in the next few years, a brand new IP for us.
So they're getting money from the Singapore government because they want their people to be in the games industry and they're helping them
yes.
out. Which is fair enough. Australia great. Does that.
Is,
not
that
to
is,
the same
yeah.
level. But
that is a great deal. And that's what we should be collaborating with, you know, and different countries and different talent. But it does mean part of the deal is a game must come out. So that's why they can't cancel this game, because they are held to this deal that a game must come out. So
no.
That's the thing.
And I'm
Dan.
Looking at the trailer here, Mike. 26K likes to 80K dislikes for the gameplay trailer. Now, what would you think after years of development seeing that?
That is...
It's
grim.
Red flags everywhere.
It is red flags. Now, here's the other thing, Dan. There was a playtest recently. This was about 20 days ago. And this was on Reddit as well. But basically, there was some... basically, some people did some closed beta testing. There was 6-hour gameplay of closed beta, and a lot of people said that there was some bugs, there was some there was a lot of issues with it. Some said there weren't any bugs, but some said they did. They said basically that it's an extremely grindy version of Black Flag, very few innovations, fetch quests, a lot of microtransactions. It doesn't have much depth to the game. It's very repetitive. So this is something really, really interesting to think about.
The top comment, Ubisoft has done exactly what everyone said they didn't want in a pirate game.
Look, so we've just talked about two games, Beyond Good and Evil and Skull and Bones. And these were meant to be big, big releases for them. Other thing, Splinter Cell, cancelled VR game, still no console title. They obviously aren't seeing any value in the single player game, but I think that is a mismanagement, because there are so many people that want Splinter Cell, and I think there will be so many people willing to try it out. Blacklist was actually a decent Splinter Cell, and I'm pretty sure it sold quite decently. But
which one?
This is the Splinter Cell Blacklist. That was the most recent Splinter Cell.
Oh, I don't know about that. Not crazy numbers.
But enough
to be all right, yeah.
Yeah. So, look, I can understand why they might not want it, but I think it is mismanagement a bit if they see no value, absolutely no value in any single player. We need everything to be multiplayer. We need everything to be live service. You know, I know Assassin's Creed is single player, but it's got so much live service to it that the only way they'll do a single player is if it's under the framework of a live service.
Do you think Ubisoft are capable of putting out a game like God of War or Uncharted or a game of that level if they put their talent?
Yeah, I think they are. Yeah, if they put the talent
And those games sell 10, 15 million. Cyberpunk.
It might take a few goes for them. It might take a few goes.
Cyberpunk didn't have multiplayer.
Exactly.
So with the right idea, I would argue Ubisoft have more talented people than CD Projekt Red.
Mm.
So and more money behind them.
Rainbow Six Siege, Dan, the other one. Great revival story, but in a pretty bad state now. So
like they're turning it around.
Yeah, it does.
We'll see.
And my favorite, they invented the Ubisoft E3 downgrade.
They actually did invent the downgrade.
They did. So if you remember Watch Dogs, the Division graphics. Watch Dogs. Do you remember Watch Dogs 1, Dan?
That video is an all-time classic where you showcase the E3 and what we got.
Yeah, what we got.
It's unbelievable, the difference.
It is. Because I remember Watch Dogs and I'm like, this is this is the God of War. This is Ubisoft. This is the peak. This looks insane. It's innovative. It's new. It's awesome gameplay. It's creative. And then it just turned out to be just an incredibly generic with a boring shooter, a boring protagonist. I didn't mind the first Watch Dogs, I will say, but I think it was it fell so short of what it could have been. So look, just a lot of poor planning and IP management, Dan, right? Now, I want to talk about the next
continue, 11 games in the next year or so. Yeah.
Continuing to talk about mismanagement. Let's talk about the next 11 games between now and March 2024, Dan. So they've got The Division Heartland coming out. That's a free-to-play game in the Division universe. They've got Avatar, the Avatar game. That looks, you know, that could look to be a good game, AAA game, Frontiers of Pandora.
Problem is with that game, we haven't seen anything besides a CG trailer. So we can't even make an assumption.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
We've got X-Defiant, right? They're free-to-play arena shooter. Who knows? Who wanted it, Dan? I don't know. Assassin's Creed Mirage.
Has that been cancelled?
No, that was it wasn't X Defiant that was cancelled. It was the other one, Dan, the other shooter that got cancelled. It's not cancelled.
It had a crossplay test this week. Select people. Sorry about that. Yep. Misinformation. But people were saying it was actually quite fun, by the way. So I just want to point that out there.
We'll wait to see. Assassin's Creed Mirage, we know that's coming. That looks like they're going to obviously go to more of a stealth focus, bring it back, less RPG elements, try to, you know, bring it back as per se.
Yep.
Skull and Bones, who knows? That's going to be delayed. Who knows? Yeah. Project Orland, The Crew. Remember, we saw the trailer for The Crew 3 not too long ago.
The Crew Motorfest, yep. Yep. Looks like a dud on arrival, sadly.
Assassin's Creed Nexus. Reportedly a VR title for the MetaQuest 2. We've got Division Resurgence, a mobile game. Yeah. We've got Rainbow Six Mobile. We've got Assassin's Creed Jade Mobile.
Grim, so I'm looking forward to two titles of 11.
Assassin's Creed Netflix collaboration. So they've got Division, Avatar, X Defiant, Mirage, Skull and Bones. This isn't too bad of a thing for slated for next year, but who knows? Like Skull and Bones, we know that's in a terrible state.
There's no way they're all coming out next year or this year.
Well, between this year and March 2024.
No, there's no way. I don't believe it.
I don't believe it either, but this is what's slated. But even if they all come out, Dan, aside from Avatar and The Division maybe, what's on offer here for people?
Avatar's their last hope. I call it.
Yeah. I mean, look, they've got the Star Wars game as well.
The genre of open world, they have to when I say not the genre, but what they do with the genre, they have to Dan do something Allen, different. If they do the checkbox shit again, it's over. They're done.
If I see a bloody fortress or a bloody tower,
you can have a fortress and all that. I don't want to see the checkpoints everywhere. The checkmark. Yeah. I don't want to see the typical storytelling that they do.
Do you know one of the worst?
There needs to be
activities?
Some emotion, some stakes. Yeah. Some good the worst
activity for me in Far Cry 6 was when the freaking you had to pick up the phone and go one place to another in like a minute or whatever. And you have a truck. Do you remember that one?
I've got a soft spot. Like, you can't argue. I've got a soft spot for Far Cry 6.
I know. It's not too bad, but it's still pretty bad.
I've got a soft spot for that series, even though that contradicts what I'm saying. But they can't just do another Far Cry or another Assassin's Creed RPG style with Avatar skin. That it will not work. I don't think that will work. There has to be something different about it. Whether it's the way you explore the world or the gameplay mechanic. Like it just cannot be, even if it was like Horizon. I don't know. It's a tough one. We'll see. They're apparently going to be at E3 this year. If E3 goes ahead, Ubisoft want to be involved and they want to showcase all this stuff. That was a report that came out a few days ago. So they're keen. They've got things ready. And they could revitalize E3 with a beautiful showing of Avatar, Frontiers of Pandora. Incredible graphics. They've got Sigourney Weaver's in the game. Worthington is in the game. There's no way. Oh, man. We need to live react when they show that gameplay. I've just got a feeling it's going to be a disaster, but
Dan, they've got Star Wars as well.
They do. They have the Star Wars open world title. Yeah. They could show that off. Yeah.
I know. It's not a bad sight.
And they've got Splinter Cell Remake. I can't wait for that.
I don't know. Who knows what's going on with Splinter Cell?
The thing is, Splinter Cell has sold like 30 million as an IP. It's a good IP sitting
there. It is. It's just sitting there. Oh, I understand where they're coming from, but it's still worth a shot. It's worth a shot compared to some of the games they're trying to go for. Which brings me on to my next thing. Iteration over innovation.
Innovation.
So I actually think Ubisoft were big innovators back in the day. I'm a huge fan of a lot of their earlier titles, right? And I'm going to say, think about some of the classics they have, Dan. They innovated with South Park, Stick of Truth. I think Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter, Rainbow Six Vegas, Brothers in Arms, even Siege. Those are some great innovative tactical shooters. They are the leaders in the tactical shooter genre, Dan. Like the Tom Clancy IP does it like no other. All right.
But they can also go generic as hell with Breakpoint.
Yes.
And that.
That's but the thing, Dan. And
One you haven't mentioned here is Assassin's Creed. Yes. Revolutionize the genre in many ways.
Yeah. And this is what I'm saying. So this is where I'm talking about where they're innovating. Assassin's Creed with stealth. Splinter Cell with stealth, man. That was so innovative. Definitely. You know, and I think about, Dan, Splinter Cell is all about the darkness. You've got the light meter on your back and stuff. Yep. Could you imagine with ray tracing? Like the different rays of light hiding and making light this full mechanic with ray tracing now in a next-gen Splinter Cell game. Open world checkbox. I will say Far Cry 3 is one of the best. It is probably the best open world. Like the open world checkbox, Far Cry 3 innovated and did it beautifully. It was such a beautiful formula. I don't blame Ubisoft for trying to pursue that formula with, you know, further titles like Far Cry 4, Assassin's Creed, The Crew, all that sort of stuff. But it's gone too far now where they're just doing it. They've just become lazy, right? I think Far Cry 3 is one of the best games. It is such a good checkbox game in that formula. But
it also had a great hook, great and it had villains, a great, villain. Great yeah. setting. There's all these it things did. Coming together as well.
Yeah. Watch Dogs, great idea, great innovation, obviously had a poor execution. Then we have other games, Child of Light, Rayman, Prince of Persia, Beyond Good and Evil, the first one, right? So you look at the games I've just listed here, that is pretty innovative, Dan. These are a lot of innovative titles. They have a lot of great legacy IP and titles here for them to use. Now, you see a trend here, Dan. A lot of these games are old games. Because now I'm going to go on to games.
What's the latest one there? Hold on. I just want to see, out of all those games you name, what's the most recent? I think it's Siege.
Probably Siege.
15.
Yeah. Probably Siege. And some people don't even agree. Actually,
what, with Siege?
Like, is it, like, some people are not a huge fan of it. I think it is great, but
I think it innovates the genre. Yeah. It stood the test of time. The whole building up your defenses before, and it's like S&D, and no one had done it like that. I think it's very innovative.
I think it's great. Yeah, I agree. So let's go to iteration, Dan. All right. Rainbow Six Extraction.
No. You just wonder who in the meeting is like going, let's do a Rainbow Six game, but it's like zombies. There's like four enemy types.
I know. They could have done something good with that. I can admit they could have done something good, because with Rainbow Six, Dan, they had all these little like animated videos with a lot of the operators, and it was cool to see them interact. They had the whole breakout event. What's it called? The outbreak event. And you saw like Ash and Doc, like in live rendered cutscenes, like talking. And it was really cool. And that was just a really cool bit of content.
When that came out, it was a big hit. So they're going, we need to capitalize on that. Let's do a game. Yeah. But unfortunately, it took them 5 years or however long it was. It was too late.
And the other thing is, once again, like Skull and Bones, they just took one part of a game of another title and said, let's just make this into a fully fledged game without innovating. Like, who wanted just a Black Flag gameplay? The beauty of Black Flag was that you got to get out of your ship. You got to, you know, the ship was a great part. You need to, if you want to just have the ship part, you need to expand on that. You know, the great part about the outbreak event was the operators, was the break. It was like a nice break from all the tactical, hardcore things. If you want to innovate it, don't just put four enemy types and some random defend the cure crap. Like, don't make it so boring and repetitive. Innovate in it. Go all in, right? So Extraction's one, Dan. Second one, Ghost Recon Breakpoint, Dan. Poorly received, poorly sold. Yves Guillemot, critical reception and sales during the first game's weeks, during the game's first weeks, are very disappointing. He said it underperformed commercially despite selling sex.
I didn't get that. Could you try it?
Thanks, Siri. Despite selling 6 million games on all platforms as of January 1st, 2020, the live service support ended on the 5th of April, shortly after they tried to add NFTs to the game. You got to remember...
It's funny because Wildlands, I think is what you're going to say, was really did well.
Yes.
It was a much better game as well than Breakpoint. sadly.
It was the best-selling retail game in 2017 in March in UK and US. It would beat Zero Dawn, Horizon Zero Dawn. It beat Breath of the Wild. It was one of the biggest video game launches in 2017. It became the fastest-selling title in the Tom Clancy franchise behind The Division. It was the seventh best-selling retail game in 2017 by the NPD Group. More than 15 million players played it since release. Everything was looking good. And then what do they do with Breakpoint? Let's just go Windows, Microsoft Word, copy, paste, compile.
I mean, it actually was. It actually feels like that, sadly. That's one of those sequels that feels like they actually took a step back from the first game. And the first game needed a lot of work, by the way. I wasn't a big fan of it.
It was clunky.
I thought it was very repetitive.
It was repetitive and clunky, and the map was huge, and it was just so repetitive. But I know they tried to get like John Bernthal. I love John Bernthal as the Punisher, as you know, in The Walking Dead.
It wasn't his fault though.
I know
it wasn't his material.
Yeah. It was. So Rainbow Six Extraction, Ghost Recon Breakpoint. I'm going to talk about Assassin's Creed as iteration because there's a lot of people suffering from Assassin's Creed burnout because of how repetitive these titles are. They did try to innovate with the RPG, but it mainly just felt like a bit of a, what can I say, like a blind innovation, like just a bit lazy in the way it tried to do its RPG mechanics and just iterated on that. We know Far Cry series people have been suffering from burnout for a long time. No one can tell me that Far Cry 3 and 4 are essentially the same game. You're in an island, you're all by yourself, you've got guns to customize, you've got pouches and pelts and animals to hunt, you've got the skill tree.
Yeah, but that is the essence of the series.
That is the essence of Far Cry, but that's a bit of a, you know, I definitely do see Ubisoft as a company trying to iterate rather than innovate on a lot of their IPs, a lot of their materials. They go for a lot of sequels now, a lot of, you know, they're just, we had this great IP back in the day. Let's just take it, make it a live service, run it to the ground and try to cheaply get some money off a legacy title or Assassin's Creed where it's just, you know, and I see what, the, you know, with Mirage, they're really trying to turn it around. I understand, but it's very iterative, and I think that's to its detriment. You can do it to a certain point, but then you've got to innovate again. You've got to bring it back again. There's a reason why Uncharted 1 to Uncharted 4 are so successful, even though, yes, they are technically iterations of each other, because there is a hint of innovation behind it. There is a great story. It isn't a dull, lifeless, like the checkbox is a great gameplay formula, but if you have nothing around it, if you don't have Vast behind it, if you don't have the story of Jason Brody behind it, you know, it just, you can't just put a random character and some random villain and it's the same gameplay, make it longer and call it, you know, an amazing game. And I know a lot of people play it, a lot of people love Far Cry, but there's a reason why it's burnout. And to put this into perspective, if anyone remembers, the map between Far Cry Primal and Far Cry 4 are the exact same map, just reskinned. So tell me how that game isn't iterative. Now we'll say,
we also forgot to mention they also have a game called The Settlers New Allies coming out in February.
Is that Ubisoft?
Actually, is that coming? Is that already out? I'd have to check that, but that is Ubisoft. And also one we didn't mention was For Honor, which was a game that you could say they...
I would say that's innovative.
Bit innovative. Let's say 70% of the way there.
Yeah.
Don't know how much of a success that game is, but they're still doing seasons. They're in year 6, season 4. They're still doing patch notes just a couple of days ago. So, I mean, they're still pushing it, but who knows?
And we forgot to mention the really bad state of Prince of Persia remake. It's not even a remake. It's like a remaster. It looked so terribly bad. Yeah, it is still coming, but it was just looked so bad when people saw it that they're like, this is not, you know, it's clearly a remaster, not a remake. Right. And it just looked really bad.
Just another disaster. I mean,
it is.
Not looking good, is it?
Yeah. And basically, it just looks like it's been either put on hold indefinitely or scrapped entirely. So,
well, they're at this point where if it's not looking good, it might be better for their reputation to scrap it.
Can you see my screen, Dan? Because those graphics for a remake look terrible.
That's
they
a remake. Absolutely terrible. I thought that was the original, sadly.
I know. That's the thing.
Goodness me.
Well, let's go to my last point, Dan, in the interest of time. Keep it short and sweet. And that is trend setting versus trend chasing, right? I got this interesting from article from the PC Gamer, and it sort of had a really good summary of the games that they have and how they've tried to chase the trend instead of set it. Now, I will say Ubisoft were trendsetters. In some of the games we talked about in their innovation, they set the trend in the tactical shooter genre. You know, South Park, Stick of Truth, the comedy games. They set the trend on open world checkbox and stealth. You know, they really did a great thing. And these two topics are closely related, innovation, iteration versus trend setting, trend chasing. But I wanted to really focus on trend chasing, Dan. You know, the Destiny clones, you know, the free-to-play looter shooters. Division 1 was great. Division 2 almost had no support. Ghost Recon Breakpoint. I think that's more of a weaker argument because I think the Division 1 was actually so good where they actually probably successfully chased the trend. But the thing is, they fail more often than they succeed. Because if you think about the Battle Royale genre, Dan, Hyperscape, Ghost Recon Frontline, which is now cancelled, they clearly were chasing instead of trying to set the trend.
They're still chasing VR. I don't blame them in a way, but also no one has been able to replicate what the big three have done, the big three, Fortnite, Apex, and COD. And it's hard to come against them, in all honesty, with the brand value. To be honest, Apex did very well just to be in that conversation themselves.
He did. He came out of nowhere.
It was, I guess it's a Titanfall world, but I mean, what people don't realize is Apex is actually the guys that made some of the best CODs. So Respawn, you know, they are the guys that, you know, they did COD 4 and all those great CODs. So that's half the reason, in my opinion. But
they are a premium studio.
You can't just cut, like, the VR genre hasn't had much innovation really lately. So
even Forza style games with the Crew 2, Riders Republic. You know, I think Riders Republic can be considered somewhat trendsetting, but I think you can just see that there is this tend to, okay, the trend is Battle Royale. Let's put all our efforts into trying making the next big thing. Even NFTs, they tried with Ubisoft Quartz, right? I don't think they're chasing the trend, but it's just a bit, it can just be a bit of tone deafness as well. Like,
no,
are
I
they
think
really listening to the fan?
They're definitely chasing. And the NFTs was a prime example of that, in my opinion. What's happened to that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just interesting. Like, who wanted X Defiant? I don't think anyone really wanted that. But I can understand why they want an arena shooter and to try make it a thing.
They want essentially a premium title in every genre. And that's what they're looking to do what I'm seeing. They want their battle royale. Yep. They want their arena shooter. They want their open world game. They want their action adventure. They want to corner every market, essentially.
And yeah, look, that's the thing, right? Like, I'm not going to say that this is some extremely strong argument, overwhelming evidence that they're doing a bad thing. These are more observations that I found, and maybe you can clearly tell where I'm coming from. I am slightly like, look, they are sort of chasing the trend a bit. They are iterating a lot more than innovating. You know, they are a bit bloated. They are mismanaging things with Skull and Bones, with Beyond Good and Evil, with Splinter Cell. So I just wanted to sum up as all of that as why I think Ubisoft is in somewhat of a dire state. Because they can turn things around, and I think they can be in a really good state. Because you got to think about the upside. Valhalla was the most successful game in franchise history. 20 million copies. It raised $1 billion in revenue. Now, even though there was a franchise burnout, they predicted it. They basically said, look, the next game is going to be Mirage. We're going to turn it around. They didn't need like an infinite warfare. And when I say infinite warfare, do you remember everyone wanted World War II? Everyone wanted an older style, more boots on the ground, right? This is when infinite warfare came out. And I think it was Battlefield 1 or Battlefield 5, where there was this huge, we thought this was a year where Battlefield was going to overtake Call of Duty because Infinite Warfare was the most disliked trailer because they're like, guys, we want boots on the ground. We don't want another futuristic jetpack flying game. And then Battlefield came out with its boots on the ground and everyone loved it. And I'm just saying that Valhalla was sold so well, they didn't need another Valhalla and low sales and bad critical reception to realize that there are people burnt out. They do need to make a change. They've seemingly predicted it and have already started making Assassin's Creed Mirage, which is great. So that could be a good thing. Far Cry 6, it was the best Far Cry sales-wise to date from memory.
Isn't that funny really that good. After all this, their latest AC and their latest Far Cry were both bestsellers?
Exactly. They've got great RPs coming up. Avatar, Star Wars. They just seem to understand what's happening. So, look, I will say there is a lot of upside. There is a lot to look forward to for Ubisoft. But,
there's also a lot to be heartbroken by.
Exactly. And when you look at when you see their next 11 games coming out now, between now and March 2024, it looks very grim. It just looks grim, Dan. And a lot of these games, their Avatar has to hit, their Division has to hit. That is pretty much
Splinter Cell remake. I mean, but
if that comes out, it's no one knows what's happening.
And also the Star Wars game, but again, none of those games we've seen gameplay. So there's nothing I can really say until we see how it runs and everything.
Exactly.
So what's your overall? Is that it?
Oh, that is all of what I wanted to say. That is all what I wanted to talk about.
Are you optimistic about Ubisoft's future, or are you, because you're saying it's the dire look at Ubisoft, but do you think we'll still be saying this in 5 years from now?
That all depends on the direction they want to go, because you think about Ubisoft, they have got some really good IP, man. Just let alone Avatar, Star Wars, the Tom Clancy IP, Ghost Recon. They've got Splinter Cell. They've got Assassin's Creed. They've got Far Cry, you know, Beyond Good and Evil, Child of Light, these sort of IP. They've got some good stuff. They just need to spend some time to actually really flesh out and innovate on these titles rather than just mass dumping all of these games on some like factory, just like churning out these bland, lifeless, iterative sequels to try to get as much money as they can, slapping on live service to all of them. They need to really bring it back to the essence of why people fell in love with these games in the first place and cater it towards them, but also modernize it. I understand that the way monetization works, they need these sort of monetary models, but I mean, if I could have it my way, I'd have it. No, none of this completely, but entirely. But I know they have to, but they just need to go back, Dan. Go back and focus on what people love about the game and realize that so many people are burnt out on a lot of these franchises, myself included.
Look at EA, how they've started to slowly turn things around as well.
Exactly.
Still not quite there, but
they're getting
there. They've had a few hits now. They've had Dead Space, Star Wars. They've also, you know, Battlefield's not looking good, but besides that, you know, they've got Wild Hearts, which I heard's all right. Sims has got a new game coming, Apex. So they're slowly bringing it back.
Need for a Speed Unbound.
For Speed Unbound, yeah. Well, that wasn't a disaster, but...
It was a disaster, but...
They've also got those, EA, what do you call it? Indie games? Originals?
Yeah, like Child of Light and stuff.
Yeah, It Takes Two, Unravel.
Oh, sorry, you're talking about EA, not Ubisoft. Yeah, It Takes Two, Unraveled.
Yeah,
they've got a few good ones.
So, yeah, we haven't seen what these games are capable of what they're going to be doing with these games. So we will have to wait until E3 or probably mid-year. We're going to be seeing a lot more Ubisoft, and when they do a showcase, we'll definitely break it down. We'll have a lot to say about that. That's going to be very interesting to dissect.
All I'm going to say, Dan, is how do we... You remember how you said, what do you think they're going to be in the next 5 years? It depends where they go. The game that's going to tell us where they're going is Avatar.
Yeah,
when we see Avatar, and probably The Division, but I'm going to say Avatar. When we see Avatar come out,
yeah,
that's when we'll know. Because that is a brand new original IP. You know, they've got no other formula to go off. It's not like the division, which already has this live service formula. This is brand new. Originally, they could have done anything they have wanted with this IP. We're going to see how that turns out. And that is going to tell us how or where Ubisoft is headed, their originality, they're out there listening to their fans and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you, Vi, for putting that together. Been a pleasure. Lovely chatting to you.
Mm.
And I'd love you to do this for another sort of...
the dire state of, I don't know.
Anyone, pick someone. I enjoyed this. Yeah. Find someone and get one going, Vi. We might do it in a month or two or something if you got the time, because this was brilliant.
We'll do it.
I don't know who else we could do it on, but I mean, you could do a comprehensive breakdown on EA. It'd be quite interesting.
Yeah. To look back. There's a few underutilized IPs and things like that.
Yeah. It's interesting, before we wrap up here, that Ubisoft didn't get caught up in a sale or something like that while their stocks were down and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the last one was like years ago with Vivendi. I remember they were trying to buy him out. But yeah, who knows?
All right, Vic, it's been a pleasure to be with
you. It has.
Make sure, everyone, if you're listening right now, make sure to, if you ever see Kyle, tell him he's an absolute dog, a complete loser. And make sure to give us 5 stars on the podcasting platform you're listening on. With that being said,
sir,
we will see you
later.